Today is Thursday, April 24th, and this is the World Socialist Website. As oligarch fortunes soar, the case for expropriating the billionaires, by Patrick Martin. The Wall Street Journal, an authoritative voice of the capitalist class, published on its front page Wednesday a report that the 19 richest households in America increased their wealth by $1 trillion in the year 2024. Their combined wealth rose from $1.6 trillion to $2.6 trillion, a staggering 62.5% increase in a single year. The smallest fortune in this group comes to $45 billion. Most of the names are familiar ones, mainly from the technology sector: Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Mark Zuckerberg, Larry Ellison of Oracle, Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer of Microsoft, Sergey Brin and Larry Page of Google, Michael Dell. They are joined by Warren Buffett, Michael Bloomberg, and Stephen Schwarzman of Blackstone Private Equity. There is one new tech mogul, Jensen Huang of NVIDIA, plus three Waltons, heirs to the Walmart empire, and two Kochs of the ultra-right oil company family. The estimates were produced by Professor Gabriel Zuckman, one of the leading analysts of trends in wealth accumulation, showing the trend in the proportion of wealth held by the top 0.00001% of U.S. households, or one in every 10 million households, over the past century. There was a steady downward drift from 1913 until 1982, then a sharp upturn after the tax cuts of the Reagan administration, culminating in a spike in 1999, just before the dot-com crash, and a slow descent into the 2008 Wall Street crash. After that, a steady rise in inequality intensified with the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020. The Journal wrote, quoting, "It took four decades for the top 0.00001% of American share of the total U.S. household wealth to grow from 0.1% in 1982, when 11 households made up that rarefied group, to 1.2% in 2023. In 1 year, by the end of 2024, the share of total U.S. household wealth for the modern 0.00001%, those 19 households, jumped to 1.8%, or about $2.6 trillion. That is the biggest one-year increase on record, according to Zuckman." End quote. The Biden administration, which came into power in the second year of the COVID-19 pandemic, made its central domestic priority the reopening of schools and workplaces, aimed at ensuring a steady supply of labor and falling labor prices for U.S. corporations despite the mounting death toll. As a result of this policy, carried out with the support of the trade union bureaucracy, workers' share of national income fell to a historic low. In January, just weeks after Trump took office, Biden declared that an, quote, oligarchy is taking shape in America, unquote. But these figures demonstrate, first, that the Democrats' own policies aided the billionaires, and second, that they thus helped Trump to win the election with his false promises of economic revival and lower prices. As the WSWS has explained, the second election of Trump represented, quote, the violent realignment of the American political superstructure to correspond with the real social relations that exist in the United States, end quote. Trump, himself a billionaire, heads a government of, by, and for the financial oligarchy, with the world's richest man, Elon Musk, overseeing measures to slash $1 trillion by firing federal workers and cutting the social benefits provided by the federal government. It would make far more sense, from the standpoint of the working class, to oppose the Trump-Musk cuts with demands to seize the $1 trillion in additional wealth accumulated by just 19 super billionaires in 2024 alone. More fundamentally, the entire wealth of the capitalist class, the trillions produced by the labor of the working class, should be confiscated to provide the basis for the socialist reorganization of economic life under a workers' government. A workers' government in the United States, simply by laying its hands on the $1 trillion increase in wealth for 19 households, could abolish poverty, hunger, and homelessness in America. It could pay a wage increase of $7,000 to every American worker. It could more than double the budget for K-12 public education. There is, however, an even more important reason for seizing the wealth of the oligarchy, not only the 19 at the top, but all the billionaires, who now number nearly 2,000 in the United States. This wealth is not only an entirely wasteful diversion of socially produced resources which could be put to better use. Beyond that, its possession gives the financial overlords unparalleled social power. This tiny parasitic layer dominates every aspect of American society, economy, politics, media. The capitalist system determines the living standards of the working class, who are the vast majority of the population, with the corporate elite deciding on jobs, wage rates, working conditions, exercising an effective dictatorship within the workplace, reinforced by their paid industrial police and the union bureaucracies. The billionaires control the leading educational institutions, as indicated in yesterday's report in the New York Times, that large donors to Harvard are pressuring the university to reach a compromise with the Trump administration's demands for a right-wing takeover and purge of faculty, students, and curriculum. They own the major newspapers, the television networks, the film studios, and they increasingly seek to censor both the corporate and social media. The billionaire Rupert Murdoch has spearheaded the fascist transformation of the Republican Party. Jeff Bezos of Amazon has remade the Washington Post, and billionaire Shari Redstone has just forced out the producer of 60 Minutes to facilitate her sale of Paramount CBS to the son of Larry Ellison, one of Trump's top backers. The billionaires buy and sell politicians in both the Democratic and Republican parties, thus enjoying an unchallenged monopoly in official politics. When the fundamental interests of the financial aristocracy are at issue, congressmen, senators, and presidents snap to attention. Senate Democratic leader Charles Schumer abruptly dropped his opposition to the Trump administration spending bill and secured the votes to pass it when it became necessary to reassure the financial markets. Trump himself backed off his bullying threats against Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell when Wall Street signaled that firing the top central banker could trigger a market crash. It is from this standpoint that the World Socialist website has criticized the Fighting Oligarchy campaign, mounted by Senator Bernie Sanders and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. The large turnout at their rallies, like the huge participation in the April 5th and April 19th protests against the Trump administration, expresses the social anger among millions of working people and their desire to fight back. But Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez never oppose capitalism or call for a struggle against it, and they supported and hailed the Biden administration even as it was presiding over the greatest ever accumulation of wealth on the part of the financial aristocracy. Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez know that their pinprick reform proposals, such as overturning the notorious Citizens United decision of the Supreme Court, or raising the income tax rate for billionaires by a tiny amount, cannot be carried out in the face of billionaire opposition, and would have no significant effect in any case. They offer such proposals because they are political charlatans who seek to keep the rising tide of working class anger and militancy trapped within the rotten framework of the Democratic Party. In recent weeks, the WSWS has published several important commentaries on the American Revolution and the Civil War. These have been occasioned by anniversaries, but there is a more fundamental significance. Workers in the United States must learn to think big. The only answer to gigantic social problems posed by the crisis and decay of global capitalism is the mass mobilization of the international working class on the basis of a revolutionary socialist program. This requires a break with the Democratic Party, which, together with the Republican Party, serves as an instrument for the domination of the financial oligarchy over society. Workers must break through the straitjacket imposed on them by the unions, which isolate every struggle by workplace and industry and subordinate all struggles to the strictures of contracts and laws written by the bosses. They must reject the efforts, particularly fostered by the pseudo-left and the Democratic Party, to divide them along the lines of race, gender, and sexual orientation. Above all, the working class must reject nationalism, which divides American workers from their class brothers and sisters in Canada, Mexico, China, Europe, and around the world. This means, particularly now, taking up the defense of immigrant workers in every country and their right to live and work freely and without restriction, and pursuing the class struggle to defend jobs, living standards, and democratic rights, and to halt the threat of imperialist world war, the World Trotskyist Movement urges workers to form new, independent class organizations, rank-and-file committees. These are based on rejection of the profit system and the capitalist nation-state, and instead seek to unite workers across national boundaries on the basis of their common class interests. We urge workers and young people who wish to learn more about this perspective to attend the May Day rally organized by the International Committee of the Fourth International. Register at wsws.org/mayday. Israeli National Security Minister pledges to bomb food depots as Gaza blockade reaches 50th day, by Andre Damon. On Tuesday, Israeli National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir attended a meeting with leading members of Congress at Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago Club in Palm Beach, Florida, where he pledged to bomb food and aid distribution centers in Gaza, claiming his proposals met with support on the part of the lawmakers. Ben-Gvir said in a post on X, quote, "I had the honor and privilege of meeting with senior Republican Party officials at Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate. They expressed support for my very clear position on how to act in Gaza, and that the food and aid depots should be bombed in order to create military and political pressure to bring our hostages home safely." Ben-Gvir was expressing the actual policy of the Israeli government, which aims to ethnically cleanse the Palestinian population from Gaza through deliberate starvation. On Tuesday, the total Israeli blockade of all food, water, electricity, and medical supplies into Gaza reached its 50th day. In a statement, the UN Relief Coordination Office said this is now the longest period without any supplies entering the Gaza Strip since the start of Israel's onslaught in October 2023. UN spokesperson Jens Lerke said Tuesday, quote, "Right now it is probably the worst humanitarian situation ever seen throughout the war in Gaza," unquote, noting that the entire population of Gaza is facing acute shortages of food, medicine, fuel, and clean water. UNRWA Commissioner General Philippe Lazzarini said in a statement Tuesday, quote, "Hunger is spreading and deepening, deliberate and man-made. Gaza has become a land of desperation. Humanitarian aid is being used as a bargaining chip and a weapon of war," unquote. Gaza's bakeries have been forced to shut down, and the entire health system is collapsing amid a lack of medical supplies. Lazzarini said, quote, 2 million people, a majority of women and children, are undergoing collective punishment. Last week, the Euromed Human Rights Monitor published a damning account of Gaza teetering on the brink of famine, quoting, "Euromed Monitor's field team in the Gaza Strip has observed alarming indicators pointing to a severe food crisis that may soon reach the level of famine. The ongoing Israeli blockade has caused a severe and persistent shortage of essential food items necessary for survival, including grains, proteins, and fats. Much of the enclave's remaining agricultural and food infrastructure has either been bombed or otherwise destroyed, and/or is currently under Israeli military control. As a result, people have been forced to sell their most basic belongings just to secure food, signaling the onset of a breakdown in their ability to endure the hunger. Families in the Gaza Strip have been forced to cut the number of their daily meals, resulting in noticeable weight loss among residents. In the near total absence of fresh and nutritious food, most people now rely almost entirely on the enclave's limited supply of canned goods, while many others have become fully dependent on food banks for their daily meals. However, these food banks have come under intensified Israeli military attacks in recent weeks, further depriving residents of access to even the most basic food necessities, end quote. In a statement published April 17th, a group of humanitarian organizations, including Oxfam and Save the Children, published a statement warning that the, quote, humanitarian aid system in Gaza is facing total collapse. The statement declared that, quote, this is one of the worst humanitarian failures of our generation. Every single person in Gaza is relying on humanitarian aid to survive. That lifeline has been completely cut off since a blockade on all aid supplies was imposed by Israeli authorities on the 2nd of March. The statement noted that, quote, more than 400 aid workers and over 1,300 health workers have been reported killed in Gaza since October 2023, despite the requirement under international humanitarian law for humanitarian workers to be protected, end quote. The statements by Ben-Gvir make clear that the Israeli military's attack on humanitarian organizations is a deliberate policy aimed at provoking famine throughout the region. Ben-Gvir's trip to Mar-a-Lago is part of a tour throughout the United States involving a visit to Yale University on Wednesday. Ben-Gvir's office said that among the congressmen in attendance was Republican Congressman Tom Emmer, the third highest-ranking member of the House of Representatives. On Wednesday, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz reiterated the position of the Netanyahu government that, quote, no humanitarian aid will enter Gaza, unquote. The visit by Ben-Gvir follows 2 weeks after the trip by Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to meet with U.S. President Donald Trump at the White House, where Netanyahu declared that the Israeli government is working on Trump's pledge to ethnically cleanse Gaza. The plan is being implemented through the deliberate starvation of the Palestinian population, the daily bombardment and mass killing of the civilian population, and the active preparations for the full permanent military occupation of the Gaza Strip and the creation of the infrastructure to forcibly displace and transfer the Palestinian population outside of Gaza. Last month, NPR, the Financial Times, and Haaretz reported that the Israeli military has drawn up a plan to fully occupy the Gaza Strip, internally displace the remaining population, and provide only the, quote, minimum caloric amount necessary for survival, unquote, in the words of Haaretz. 1 month ago, the Israeli Security Cabinet formally voted to establish an office dedicated to overseeing the ethnic cleansing of Gaza. Defense Minister Katz stated that the Bureau would manage the, quote, departure to third countries, including securing their movement, establishing movement routes, checking pedestrians at designated crossings in the Gaza Strip, as well as coordinating the provision of infrastructure that will enable passage by land, sea, and air to the destination countries, unquote. In 2007, Ben-Gvir was convicted by an Israeli court of racist incitement and support for groups on terrorism blacklists. Since 2023, his policies of ethnic cleansing and mass killing have been adopted by the Israeli government in its genocidal onslaught on Gaza, using the October 7, 2023 Hamas attack as a pretext. According to Gaza's health ministry, at least 51,300 Palestinians have been killed in the genocide to date, with over 1,900 Palestinians since Israel unilaterally abrogated a ceasefire agreement on March 18th. On Wednesday, Israeli airstrikes killed 25 people, including 11 people in a school that was transformed into an emergency shelter. This followed the killing of at least 17 people, mostly women and children, in strikes on Tuesday. Despite the ongoing famine, coverage of the humanitarian situation has almost totally dropped from news coverage in the United States. And after having overseen the Gaza genocide under President Joe Biden, the Democrats have voted repeatedly against any restrictions on U.S. arms sales to Israel under the Trump administration. Dirty War Pope blesses Trump administration hours before his death, by Andrea Lobo. Pope Francis, born Jorge Mario Bergoglio, died Monday at the age of 88, following a protracted case of pneumonia that kept him hospitalized for 5 weeks. Since the bells tolled in the Vatican St. Peter's Square, announcing his death, the corporate news cycle in much of the world has been dominated by fawning coverage of the Argentine Jesuit, the first pope from Latin America. In the United States, where barely a fifth of the population identifies as Catholic, the news media delves unceasingly into the intricacies of the papacy. This fascination can only be explained in political and class terms. Following tributes by Barack Obama and Joe Biden, U.S. President Donald Trump announced that the first foreign trip of his second term will be to attend the Pope's funeral in Rome, which will take place Saturday. The media's canonization of Bergoglio as the father of the poor, man of the people, and the progressive pope aims to place a last coat of democratic and modern varnish on the Catholic Church as it grants its blessing to the ruling elite's global turn to fascist and dictatorial forms of rule. Speaking at the White House Easter egg roll Monday, the American would-be Führer called Bergoglio, quote, a good man, unquote, in a clear affront against the separation of church and state. Trump said, quote, we're bringing religion back in America, unquote, as he ordered U.S. and state flags flown at half-mast across the country. Italy's fascistic Prime Minister Giorgia Meloni applauded, quote, the privilege of enjoying his friendship, his advice, his teachings, unquote. Meloni is the political heir of Mussolini, who also enjoyed a close friendship with the papacy, even as his black shirt gangs beat up Catholic clerics in youth. From Brazil's Lula da Silva and Spain's Pedro Sanchez to the fascistic Ferdinand Marcos Jr. of the Philippines, several heads of state with large Catholic populations declared days of national mourning. Argentina's fascist president Javier Milei, who had previously called Bergoglio an imbecile, recalled the time he was received by the Pope in the Vatican and declared a week of mourning. Genuine sympathy is naturally being felt by workers and youth across the world as they hear or read about Bergoglio's painful illness and verbal denunciations of war, inequality, greed, and racism, among other popular positions. These feelings emerge not because of, but despite, the eulogies from hated capitalist politicians and media outlets. Most recently, Bergoglio had denounced Trump's mass deportation plans as a violation of human dignity and specifically berated U.S. Vice President J.D. Vance for claiming these policies were in accordance with Catholic views. One could almost be forgiven for suspecting that Vance's Easter Sunday visit was too much to bear for the pontiff, who died only hours later. Quote, I know you have not been feeling great, but it's great to see you in better health, unquote, Vance told the visibly dying man. But Bergoglio's framing of migrant rights as a priority for his papacy, his encyclical calling climate change a moral crisis, calls to decriminalize the LGBTQ community, and other minimally progressive gestures were never intended to alter the reactionary character of the Catholic Church, whose official teachings on issues like same-sex marriage, abortion, and gender identity remain unchanged. Bergoglio's calls for humility have not stopped the Catholic Church from maintaining its hundreds of billions of dollars in assets and status as the world's largest landlord. For that matter, his description of inequality as a social disease failed to stop him from hosting, in the friendliest and most complacent terms, members of today's tech and financial aristocracy, including Tesla's Elon Musk, Amazon's Jeff Bezos, Apple's Tim Cook, and Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg. His appeals for peace, famously kissing the feet of South Sudanese warlords to end the civil war, went hand in hand with the faithful blessing of imperialist leaders responsible for the worst war crimes since World War II, including Obama, Biden, and Trump. Such performative stances on social and environmental issues were aimed at regaining the Catholic Church at least some measure of popular credibility amid a historic drop in followers, as youth and workers in general feel repulsed by its obscurantism in the age of globalization and smartphones. A limited adaptation to the growing radicalization of masses around the world was seen as an existential question for the Church. Now, ruling elites everywhere exploit the death of the People's Pope as an opportunity for proclaiming a return of religion, with all its backwardness and ignorance. Amid the deepest crisis of capitalism since World War II, such efforts are seen as necessary to provide a cover for the enrichment of the world's oligarchs and the suppression of growing mass opposition through the promotion of feudal-like fascist reaction. Such has been the character of previous reform efforts in the Catholic Church, which remains the same bastion of reaction that carried out the Inquisition and oversaw the genocide of native peoples during the colonial period. Figures like Pope Leo IX, from 1049 to 1054, condemned clerical corruption and simony, yet rural churches remained mired in abuses, contributing to heresies like Catharism. The Council of Trent in 1545 through 1563 centralized doctrine and discipline, but entrenched the church's alignment with political power and resistance to doctrinal evolution. John XIII's reforms from 1962 through 1965 modernized liturgy and engagement with the world, yet post-conciliar battles over implementation deepened divisions and failed to resolve systemic clericalism or abuse scandals. Francis's own past reflects the Catholic Church's natural alliance with fascism. As a leading figure in the Argentine Church during the country's dirty war of 1976 through 1983, Bergoglio was accused by priests and lay workers of collaborating with the military dictatorship in efforts to cleanse the church of leftist elements. This was not merely a personal failing. The Argentine church hierarchy as a whole provided cover and moral sanction to the junta's torturers and assassins, assuring them they were doing God's work. An estimated 30,000 suspected leftists, among workers, students, and intellectuals, were disappeared, tortured, and murdered. Bergoglio was implicated in the 1976 kidnapping of Jesuit priests Orlando Iorio and Francisco Jalix, whom he allegedly failed to protect, and was accused of withholding support for their social work in Buenos Aires slums, a factor that led to their detention. The military junta also systematically kidnapped babies born to women in torture centers, placing them with regime-aligned families. Survivors, including Estela de la Cuadra, testified that Bergoglio provided a handwritten note to her father in 1978 to inquire about her missing pregnant sister, only to learn the baby had been taken by the regime. This contradicted Bergoglio's 2010 court claim that he was unaware of baby thefts until after the dictatorship. Bergoglio testified in 2010 to address these allegations, though survivors criticized his evasive responses and refusal to appear in open court initially. As Pope, Francis never returned to his native Argentina. Independently of his mental state on Sunday, Bergoglio had no trouble in blessing the Trump administration, as it adopts political disappearances that echo those of Latin America's military juntas, including of foreign students who have protested the genocide in Gaza. That was his last major official act in his meeting with Vance, and one of the most consequential ones that he will be remembered for. This has been Paul Fuller for the World Socialist Website.
The World Socialist Website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI, the leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.